That's rice.
Yeah. Did you ever see a mortise?
Sir?
Did you ever see a mortise?
A carpenter's mortise?
No. This is when you got the husk off of rice with.
Oh, no.
get a great big log, block, and you burn it out all but the edges. Burn out till you have a hole in the egg shape.
Yeah.
Then you put your rice in there.
Yeah.
Well, let me go back a little bit. The first time I ever saw, my daddy had a little field of rice. And you let it stand till it almost gets ripe. The seed is maturing. You go in there with a reap hook and cut it. Put it till you get a bundle about that big. And then you tie it. Take a few stalks of that rice, just like you do fodder.
Mm-hmm.
And you tie it up. And you get, 50, how many bundles you want. And you get you a long pole. And you either have two poles to get you a tree with a fork in it. And put your pole out on this end. And you hang that rice, the seed, all go down. And that was the old-fashioned way. Then you take it and stack it in your barn as you need it. He had a pole across the barn, and we'd take an old sheet or take four or five crocus sacks and rip them up and sew them together, make a big sheet. You'd take that rice and whip it across that pole to get your seed off. And then you take it and put it in this mortise and take a pestle. Let's go and go and go till you get all the husk off of it, loose. Then you take it up and get out in the wind or somewhere and hold it up over a 10-tub pole. Oh, your husk blows away, and then you got your rye. Mm-hmm. You talk about something good. And they always cooked in old iron pots back then.
Yeah.
They didn't know nothing about no aluminum pots. Or there would be just a little, kernel of the thing. I reckon it'd go just a little black streak. But you eat that right on it, it's all right. And later on, they got a machine down in Ocala that you could take down there and they'd clean it for so much a bushel or take toll out of your rice. Just like the old Goodson mills used to be. You'd take a bushel or two of corn there and they'd take toll out instead of you having to pay out money. And you grow this rice preferably in a pond or you're in the bottom where it stays damp well all the time. This boy that was up here in the hammock before I took it, he planted some rice in between his corn up there.
Rainy?
No, Clarence Rowell.
Clarence Rowell.
And it made pretty fair rice. He never did try to gather anything, just left it in the birds and stuff he ate up. But it's beautiful. It's, when you get it clean, it's white and pretty. Uh-huh.
Will it come seed itself?
No. It might if you let it stay there and could keep the birds and things off, it'd probably, it won't, a rat tune won't come back from the old stalk.
Yeah.
You take sugar cane. If you plant it this year and cut it, then take your turn plant, sow dirt on where the cold weather won't get it. Then next year, you fertilize and you make more cane the second, third year than you did the first year because it keeps stooling out. Where you don't have two or three stalks the first year, next year you probably have six or eight.
How many years can you keep doing that, though?
Huh?
How many years can you keep doing that?
Dan, I don't know. I expect four or five. As long as you take care of it. I've seen those old stubbles, they call them. It'd be wine, you know, where they, each year they keep putting out more stalks.
Mm-hmm. Now that's rice?
No, sugar cane.
Sugar cane, yes. You know what? My mind wandered a little bit. I was on the Burma Road. I was on that for a year. And we kind of lived in the Chinese fashion there. Ours was a Chinese unit part of the time. And we'd carry this rice with us. And all along there, they'd have a place where they'd have a mortar. And I don't know why. I just never gave it any thought. But they had a, don't you know, it was on a long pole where you push it up and down like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd just stand over there and just doggle it a little bit, and it would clean your rice.
Yeah. That was the same principle, on the same principle I thought
about.
I thought about it since then. There wasn't no such a thing as a spring harden, but if you can got to a limb that would give,
yeah.
Each time you take out of a mortar, that thing weighed 6 or 8 pounds, maybe 10 some of them.
Yeah.
If you could have got to a limb and tied your rope to your mortar, then pull it down,
yeah.
It would pull it back up for you. All you'd have done would have been giving it a thrust downward.
Well,
but nobody ever thought about anything.
Well, now that's the reason they did it then, because it's heavy.
Yeah, yeah. And it took that much weight, you know, to knock that husk off that rice.
Yeah. And everybody coming along there would use that same thing, you know. They just leave it there, sort of public.
Yeah.
Have them all up and down the road. Yeah.
I can remember when there's 6 of us kids at home, my mother would fry one chicken, but she'd have lots of other stuff. And we'd take a piece of chicken and gravy and rice, grits, bread, whatever you had, and other stuff. We'd make a meal off of it. On Sunday or Saturday, preferably, when it was church days, she'd cook her Sunday dinner on Saturday. Take one old hen and make a big perlope, chicken and rice, whatever you want to call it. And we'd eat that for Sunday dinner. And she'd have cakes and what not, but now, person ain't gonna sit down and eat just one piece of chicken, because that's about, if you're gonna have a chicken dinner, that's about all you're gonna eat, except maybe a little salad or bread or something, tea or...
Oh, it's the other way around, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Then you need a little chicken to save up all that other.
That's right.
And well, now you...
Eat a whole lot of chicken and don't care nothing about the other.
How about that?
We used to have fish fries. Well, we wouldn't want nothing but fish and cough and hush puppies.
Yeah.
And maybe a pickle or something. But now, if you go to, they start out to have a fish fry, they got all kind of salads, cakes and pies and pickles and iced tea,
yeah.
Coffee. People just won't take time enough to enjoy themselves anymore.
Now, Henry Brown's, where was that, where you saw Henry Brown's daddy?
It was down there, about 2.5 miles west of Fairfield.
Yeah, before they come up here.
Yeah, you know where Fairfield is.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't no graded road. Right through Fairfield then was a sandy road. And we used to... Gibson's store there's what they call sink, blue sink. And my daddy said one time it had so much rain there till he went down that road in a rowboat, in a fishing boat.
Yeah.
I've never seen that much water down there, but I know it's low country, you know, that's most high hills all around it, you might say. And there was an old settlement down there. I wish I had a history on it. There was an old stage line went through there. And this old settlement was Benedict. And I guess there was northern people. They had a hotel up there. I bet you had 50 or more rooms in it. And
at Fairfield?
Yeah, at Benedict, just
Benedict.
Beyond Fairfield, yeah. And there were several great big two-story houses, mansions you might as well call them. And I've often wondered Now there was a good bit of citrus back into that time, but wasn't any sawmills. It must have been a kind of a rich man's playhouse.
Yeah.
And I can remember that old hotel, but I can't remember whether it was two or three stories. Didn't have any lights or waterworks or anything, you know, back then. That wasn't. You'd have a wash, put you on a wash bowl in your room, and maybe a big tub somewhere where you could go and get you all over bath. But Lord, it was the best kind of lumber in those things.
Yeah.
Now, I can remember about where the old stage line went. Now, Ms. Grimm said it used to come. Was it the other side of Davis's or this side? The stagecoach line.
Well, I've heard my daddy say that the stagecoach line come out in that way somewhere. I think it meant to.
I don't know.
Now, Henry's daddy would have that one horse, and he would turn his land with that little plow.
Yeah.
And he had that, what you call it?
Wooden foot.
Wooden foot plow.
Yeah. Wooden foot cultivator.
Wooden foot
cultivator. Well, I reckon that'd be right, because you'd cultivate with it.
Yeah.
But now, later years, they got what they call cultivators. You know, it's iron, got a dozen or more teeth on it.
Yeah.
But most they used back them days was opening plows and twisters and sweeps.
Yeah.
Later on they got using scrapes, and well, a scrape is a whole lot easier to hold than a sweep.
Well, what did they use in the place of a harrow or a disc?
They didn't have no harrow, no disc. First harrow I can remember was a little spike tooth harrow they pulled with two horses.
Yeah.
You used a brush, didn't you, Jeff?
Huh?
You used a brush,
didn't you?
Cut off.
Oh, some people, you cut old heavy brush to kind of halfway level the land up.
Yeah.
But when an old farmer broke his ground with a one horse or a two horse plow, wasn't much level enough to do.
Yeah.
He did that with that plow.
Yeah. And then he'd open it up or hill it with a sweep of some sort.
Yeah, he'd take an opening plow and open it up.
Open plow.
And back them days, it used to be one man to open it up. And one boy or somebody go along and drop his seed, and another come along. And at one time, they had to make a round to cover a row. Then finally they got what they call a whole double foot.
Yeah.
You'd put a little opening plow on each side about this. A little bit wide in your furrow.
Yeah.
And you go along there.
Yeah.
And these old smoke boys down here, I think before the double foot ever come up, he got him a piece of heavy board. He bored him a hole on each side, and his thing was bolted onto the foot of his Georgia ratchet. Then he had two little plows over there, and he'd go down there, cover a row at one through. Well, everybody thought that was smart, and it was.
Yes.
Well, that just saved you a trip.
Yes. But he didn't buy them. He just rigged it up.
He just made it himself.
So now he would, Henry's daddy would have a little corn and molasses, sugar cane.
Yeah. Sweet potatoes and cotton and a big garden. Henry's mother used to take collard greens. I don't know how she did it, but she cooked them in an old iron pot. And my mother, somebody said she thought she put a little soda in there. And she'd put a certain amount of seed in lard. That's about all they had was hog lard. And she'd cook those things. And when she took them up, it'd be mighty near the same colors when she put them in the pot. But they were done. And they were good. And she made cornbread. We called it pawn bread. Make two pawns.
Yeah.
Right like that, and put in a flat pan and set in the oven. The salt and water. And you take goddamn collard greens. I used just a little to eat down there.
Yeah.
And old man Brown, he'd take. He was a. Well, Henry could do might near the same thing. They never did put in too much crop, but what they couldn't take a day or half a day off and go fishing. And I have seen him turn out a little horse and a lot. And he would run and play and buck and jump. He'd get his bucket and his two trout poles and a bait pole and walk 3.5 miles to a pond to go fishing. And let that damn horse down up in the lot and him just as full of line as he could be. So they hitched him to the wagon and going on, he'd walk. And he hardly ever failed to catch fish. Of course, there was a lot more fish, I reckon, than there is now, and a lot less fishing. And he'd go up there and take that little old pole and find him some earthworm, the fine old log, pine log, and get the sawyers. Go up there and he'd catch him some little fish bait and he'd set those trout poles out. Told me in that night, we used to. I'd either be down at Brown's and the boys would be up in our house playing at night. And they'd work the devil out of us by the time we got through working them before or after we got out of supper, we was ready to play some more.
Yeah.
And that old man would come in and he'd have a nice string of fish. And he'd get down there and he's very particular and he'd clean them nice. And he had the longest old platter I ever seen. And he'd cut them up, and he'd take each piece and sprinkle the salt around, and I wanted to go on and cook them. Well, I could get some to eat. He wouldn't cook them till the next morning.
Oh, he wouldn't?
No, he wouldn't cook them that night. He'd wait till the next morning and have them.
Yeah.
I couldn't see him right now. I told a joke on a part of it's true. I told him that. We go coaching that we always call him Mr. Brown.
Yeah.
And Mr. Brown gets more good out of his tobacco than anybody I've ever seen.
Yeah.
He chews it, lays it up and lets it dry, puts it in his pipe and smokes it. And while he's smoking, he sniffs the ashes up his nose and blows his nose and greases his shoe.
Tell him about the time. The old man got on to you for going swimming with the boys.
Yeah, I don't know where that'd be. But anyhow, my daddy gave me an acre of cotton. And
out of Fairfield?
Yeah. And when they'd plow right on through mine, and he'd give me Saturday and all to hoe that cotton. Well, I might not get it all one Saturday afternoon, but I'd have to hoe it until it got through. And there's a little mud puddle swimming hole, we called it. It was about 1/4 mile back of our house, maybe a little bit more. And I was out there for one Saturday afternoon. And the Brown boys thought their dad had gone to town. Well, I did too. And they'd come by and say, let's go swimming. Won't stay long, and that's all they had to say. We'd jump the fence, and we wouldn't ever walk, we'd trot. And trot over there, and the time we got there, we probably wouldn't have on nothing but a pair of pants and a shirt. And if it was warm enough, we didn't have on no shoes, and we'd jump in there and swim around and paddle around a little bit, and then jump out and run back. There's a lane right between the two places. God darn, just returning that lane, looked like here come Mr. Brown. He got out in a chair, little old chair tree, growed up beside the fence. He cut him a good switch, and he wore all three of them out.
Yeah.
He had left them home to work.
Yeah.
And he shook me, and he said, now, Mr., he called me Lolly. I don't know where he got that from.
Why?
Lolly.
Lolly.
Well, a lot of them called me that down there. He said, now, I don't want to catch you tolling my boys off to go swimming no more. I said, Mr. Brown, I didn't even ask them to go. They come by the field where I was working and asked me to go. And I don't remember how he said it, something like that. If you do it again, I'll tear you up or something. I done got over the fence. I knew darn well he couldn't catch me. Boy, when they told you to work, they meant for you to go to work.
Yeah. And he wanted that corn worked out before anything else happened.
That's right.
And then tell Dr. Miles about the time you got Henry butt beat in school.
Oh, I don't think that'd be anything. We all went to a little old school. It was 3 miles from home. And we walked. Hot or cold.
Yeah.
And this little old boy, he was too small for me to try to pick a fight with. He was just ornery mean, that's all there was to it. So one day I thought about it, I said, Henry, if you'd say the least little thing to him, he'd cuss you. Why don't you say something to that little old boy and let him cuss you and be you? I said, I don't want to, but he's too little for me to jump on him. Henry said so many cussing. Henry hit him 3 or 4 times, and my little boy went crying. Somebody went and told the teacher. And he called me, and Henry got a beating too. And then he come out there and he got me told. You smart scoundrel. Said, you had it all figured out. He knew that teacher was going to whip me. And he was told he didn't give a damn.
Now, you never even saw the law then.
Law?
Yes.
No. And one teacher taught from the 1st to 8th grade. And one little old, wasn't long as this porch, not much wider, had 2 rows of desks, one on each side in the hall, walkway down the middle. A blackboard in the one end of it. And she taught from 1st to 8th grade. Of course, she might not have but 3 or 4 kids in each class.
Sure. When did you first start seeing the law?
First I can remember, I believe, was in Ocala.
They didn't have policemen.
Yes, they did. Yes, they did. When I was 11 or 12 years old, I worked in a printing office as an apprentice printer devil, just starting off. And I got 25 cents a day. I had to walk 11 blocks to get that. And the boss had an old bicycle. He wasn't a large man, but he had a great big frame. Well, I was so small, I couldn't sit on the seat and pedal it. But most of the time I'd ride with my leg through that frame. And we'd print letterheads and envelopes and deal heads. And I'd have to go around and deliver them. Because Ocala wasn't very much larger than a Macintosh is now, I don't reckon.
Yeah.
In fact, there wasn't but 2 automobiles there. And I never will forget one time, old lime streets, and when it got wet, some of it was slick as glass. This old bicycle just had smooth tread tires on it. And I went to turn a corner, and I turned, but the bicycle did. And I was scared to death of a policeman, and I don't know why. And when I looked up, one was standing right over me. And he said, "Bud, you kind of had an accident, didn't you?" I said, "Yes." And old man Taylor, he always wrapped his envelopes or whatever it was. He put them in a nice bag with a heavy wrapper and tied it with a string. And I had an old homemade basket on the front of that bicycle. And my boxes, my packages was all scattered around, and the policeman helped me pick them up. And he said, "Did it hurt?" I said, "No, I said, oh." I wouldn't have told him if he did. So he helped me get my packages back in. And he said, "Now you're going where you're going, and be careful." said you could get hurt that way, just as nice as you'd be, but I was scared and I don't know why.
Yeah.
I was really scared.
Well, I was never scared of the law. I remember Sox Freeman, and he was there in town, and he'd walk around sometime with a billy on, but generally he didn't. And I know we used to play ball games out at the fairground, and he would be out there. And sometimes he just played like everybody else.
Yeah.
And I didn't know why they had policemen. I figured it was fellas get too much to drink and get scrappy every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't, I can't remember anything else.
But one of the biggest kicks I got when I was working at that printing office, right across the street kind of hanging was the fire station. And it was, I listened out all the time. It had a big old bell, and like a big church bell when they had a fire, they'd ring that bell, I don't know why, to alarm it, neighborhood, I reckon.
Tell you where it was.
Yeah, well, maybe so many tone, so many rings, certain avenue or something. But they had one old big white horse, and it kept them in the stall. And they'd train them. They'd pull a string and that door would open, a little bell would ring, that old horse would run out there and back right under the shafts. Well, he pulled this old gray horse, pulled a ladder wagon. And they had two that pulled a hose, and I don't know whether they had, yeah, they had city water there then. But it didn't take them but about a minute to get those horses, just about as quick as you could get in a truck and crank it up. And when they come out there, they come out running. And it just was the biggest, best sight for me to see that old gray horse come out there.
Yeah.
Sitting up on a pretty high seat, you know, and they had a little clang clang bell.
Yeah.
And of course, it wasn't nothing but carriages and buggies. Wasn't no automobile had traffic.
Well, that little blacksmith shop now up towards Rochelle, I don't know that I ever saw one of those. I can't quite picture it.
Well, there's none of it that left there now.
There's another one there.
The one you were talking about a while ago.
The old nigger hat?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's not. Well, there was three blacksmith shops in making up.
Yeah, but old man Eddie Stokes was.
Yeah.
Well, this one up there, he didn't have to have much to work with, did he?
No. Let's see. They'd have a forge, an anvil, and of course tongs, and a hammer, and vise, an anvil, and they had something I reckon you've seen that you, I got one out there, they put in an anvil, they called it a cutter, and something made like a cold chisel on that's got shoulders and you drop it down in a little square slot, and if you've got a small piece of iron, just put it on that length you want and hit it with a heavy hammer.
Yeah.
Then they have a
big tub of water to dip it in.
Yeah. And they'd have a, what do you call it, a borehole drill. They'd have a big drill. Now all that was done by Armstrong.
Yeah.
Then the blacksmith, he generally did woodwork on the wagon too, you know, and they'd have to have hand saws and planes and spoke shaves, and they had a pretty good little amount of tools.
Yeah. But nothing very costly.
No.
I believe that fellow man's name was George Williams.
George
Williams.
Williams.
I know his first name was George, and I believe it was George Williams.
Yeah. What kind of house did Henry's daddy live in?
He lived in it was a fairly comfortable house. In a way, I reckon it didn't leak. It was covered with homemade shingles.
Yeah.
And he had wooden shutters instead of glass, like these.
Yeah.
I think he had three, four, three or four bedrooms. Maybe later on he built a cotton room. That was attached to his house, dude. And he had a porch. Oh, Lord, the front porch and side porch. He had a big kitchen and dining room. And they called it the fireplace room then, which was, I reckon, as good a name as any. It was a parlor and a fire and a sitting room. And had a pretty good sized fireplace in there.
Well, he had a pretty good sized establishment then.
Yeah, and later on, his wife, he built it, or somebody built it. She run a little store out there.
Oh.
Just a little country store. There's quite a few niggas scattered around.
Yeah.
And let's see. My dad and Giles and Bill Markham and the Nixons. Probably, well, old man M.L. Payne. But if you went to his house, you might as well go to Phelps. You know, that was all the white settlers it was out then. Well, the mission lived right about 3 miles from Therapy.
You mean no more than that?
That was all there was out there. But there was quite a few niggers.
Yeah.
And we all know old Captain Carter and McLaughlin lived over there. Coming back this way later on, my uncle lived over there, old man Barney Jennings, and then a fellow by the name of Austell. And it wasn't but one more family, and I can't think of that name, between there and Flemington.
That was right sparse.
Hmm?
That right sparse.
Yeah.
Well, when did the settlers come in there? Afterwards?
Yeah. Now, when we lived out there at Brown, you know, side of Brown, my daddy come out here before the big freeze from come down here from South Carolina. And Lord, he moved around a lot. Let's see, that was in 19. Well, I was 14 years old when we moved out there. 1910, I reckon. I was born in 1896. 1910. But I don't remember what year it was they first came. My two oldest brothers, I can remember mother saying, they lived down at Orange Lake and there was droves all around there. After the big freeze, they'd never seen any orange to speak of, you know, in Carolina. And said the boys were big enough, they had them a little bucket. And they'd go out there and try to get it full and then try to make two or three more stables. And they'd fall off and they'd get mad. Of course, after the fruit was frozen until it thawed out, it was all right.
Yeah.
After it thawed out, then it started souring.
Now, this is the end of that little talk with Tuck Mac on Wednesday afternoon. Oh, I just took off from what I was doing, thinking I'd tape a little bit and come on back. Well, I stayed an hour and a half. Out on the front porch, he had taken coal. He'd got too hot gardening yesterday or sometime. Anyhow, this around 4:20, Channel 1 over, 4:20, Channel 1 over, Wednesday the 8th of April 1970, Wednesday the 8th of April 1970, Channel 1 over around 4:20, 4:25.
Yeah. I check it, I do that.
I remember their mother coming in town with them. When they'd come into school, they'd drive a horse and buggy.
Oh, got it.
And Miss Dorothy always had beautiful clothes. You know, children in school notice things like that. And and then the next thing, she left Mr. Griffin for this other man. And I don't know if Mr. Griffin kept the children or not. Anyway, she had a girl by this, what was his name, Joe? Manson John.
Yeah.
Had a girl by him who was about my girl's age. And then he married this other woman, I don't know just when, and I think she made him a good wife.
That was Willis Deering Dippin in 1929 or 30. Yeah, he was married to the second wife at the time. Because I know I went over there one day and he had bought a that is when these old Victrolas first come out with a cabinet, and he had ordered her one and asked me if I'd ride to old Hawthorne with him. It was shipped by express or freight, and I went over him to get it. And then Ms. Gerther and Madison Johnson, they separated. And she the one who married Charlie White?
Mm-hmm.
Now this
town, what is? I know him very well.
I think I remember seeing in the Danger Fund where they got the marriage license.
Oh, really? Yes, Ms. Your neighbor down here was the best. She was the bridesmaid or something or other.
I remember that.
Louise
Graham.
She loves to do things like that.
Oh, has
she? Louise likes to be in the limelight.
She's sort of public spirited and keeps her hand and everything.
She does since they've gotten the money out of that property that she's been able to do. She's always wanted to, but she's been able to since she's had money to do with.
Mm-hmm.
I left you. I had my horse. And he'd act up sometimes, and he could throw me. But he never could make me believe it till he done it. And I left at daylight one morning. And to show you how tough those prayer points were, when I started to get on, it looked like I was sitting up on top of a big knot like that. And it took me a good while to get on, and every time I tried to get on, me'd rip. I finally got on him and got him started. I looked him out to a bootlegger and got my 2 pints of whiskey. It was cold as the devil that morning. And I looked him from at the bridge, and he walked across there. Looked him on the girth and got on and hitched, and the old man come up. Let's come on in and have a coffee. And went in and had some coffee. He was riding a mule then. And he had a nigger, and he had another white boy. So we started out cow hunting. We was going to get his up to test him. And we went down the side of Orange Lake, went on to Loch Lucy, on the west side of Loch Lucy, and hunted, picked up cow, and drove him back that day to his pen. He had a pen. As well as I can remember, right close in that old Jackson place. And we pinned them up. And of course, it was too late to inspect them that evening. I told him I'd come on home and go back the next day. He said he had a butcher too, anyhow. And he didn't mind keeping them close, shut up overnight. and I looked that horse home. I was kind of mad with him. Then I got up the next morning and went to feed him. And I thought I'd probably find him dead before I got halfway to Lottie Wicked at it. Come on, bring me the breakfast.
Now that was Mr. Guthrie. He was, Miss Guthrie had a picture of him riding a horse. And after he died, she had it enlarged and touched up and colored and all like that.
He had some kind of land deal with well, Fifa, I think, was turpentine most of that country back in there then.
Yeah.
And he had some kind of deal he kind of looked after for them to let him graze his cow. He didn't have a very large place back in
there. He didn't ever have much, did he?
No.
Well, he didn't need much.
No, he didn't need much.
He just leased that other from him or just take care of it for him.
Yeah. Him and old man Jackson, I think, kind of worked together. There'd been other range riders, and then this big fella, George Hunt, went over there one day. And they were smart. There was a road went through a branch, and it was dense, thick on each side. And they built a pen right in that branch. That was a natural run for those horses to go back and forth. And they had some of the riders had been over there and killed two or three. And we pinned them and helped him get them to the house. And I believe all of them belonged to old man Jackson. Anyhow, Gertha was helping to help the old man. I don't know what he gonna do when dip time comes. No, that was what it was. It was during dip. He says, "Well, I don't know." He says, "I think I'll just wait and let the range rider come and take him and dip him." He says, $3, that's cheap, and I can do it myself."
Now, Mr. Jackson left that country and got into business, and he got to be a wealthy man, as I understand it. Andrew Jackson.
Well, wait a minute now. We knew old man Jackson as old man Bill Jackson. And he was old. He was way older than Gerson and me at the time.
Well, now this one was the same age that he and Guthrie were partners, you know, worked things together.
A lot of them.
Must have been his boy.
It must have been, yeah, because...
That's only Jackson I remember. It was Miss R. Jackson.
No, this
and
was...
lived up around Gainesville.
R. Jackson was a big cattleman. Mm-hmm. Miss Lovett Jackson, you've heard of Lovett Jackson.
Yes.
I love it, Jackson. And Robert Peoples' wife.
No, Peoples.
Robert Williams.
Right.
Yeah. The old man Arch Jackson adopted those children.
Arch.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then Lovett boy named for him.
Yeah.
It?
Mm-hmm.
Now that's old Jackson that I never heard of to remember.
Well, now you never got in old man Arch Jackson's influence with his cattle. He used to have a whole lot of.
I inspected them after dipping. I never will forget. The big boss agreed to meet me up at Jim Carter's store, where Jim had his store. And had to go back in at the prairie, I reckon, a couple of 3 miles. Old man Arch had some of them pinned up, and him and Lovett was just a yearling boy there.
I never will forget that old man. He had a snow white mustache. And if a cow could be drove, he drove him. And he and Bubba went and got the rest of them and had some old Bramas and half breeds and mates and all like that. Got him in the pen. Mr. Jesus, he was a big boy. He said, now if you go over there and have him run through the chute, I'll scratch him and we'll get through quick. I said, all right. No little kind of mad to start off with. And then he'd run at old man Jack and he'd take his hat and fan him and step out the way. One come with me and I stepped up on the fence. And I said, well, what the boss is going to say about it? But we started back out. He said, you know, he said, that old man got some bad cattle. I said, you seen how I treat him too, didn't you? He says, I don't blame you a bit in the world. If I'd have been in your place, I'd done the same thing. He says, one of these days, old man Jackson's going to get it. But he never did. He was a fine old man, but he didn't take any pushing.
He didn't.
What he told you could depend on it. And what you told him, he depended on it. You better do it.
Yeah.
Now, he worked in there. The old man moved it around. All of them had cattle all in there. That was when the prairie was open.
Yeah.
Not fenced.
Yeah.
And then, old man, every old farmer or cattleman around there would have a few cows in there.
Yeah.
And I've got to tell you the other day when you start gathering, they'd all bunch up and go in there and gather them and drive them to a pen and then separate and mark and brand them. Mr. Jackson used to keep, always give one or two or three good saddle horses. And he rode the devil out of them too, mister. He didn't play when he went in the woods. He just had a day's work to do and he done.
Yeah.
I'm asking, you remember if it was old man Art Jackson and Joe Smith told me they drove some cattle. If it was Mr. Art Jackson, they drove him from here to Tampa to Laxboro to back in Butcher Place. He could tell all about how long it took him.
Yeah.
And you don't make quite as good a car, you know, a driving car, as you do in a car.
Yeah.
And I reckon 25 to 30 miles a day.
That's the only thing I remember about old man Horace Jackson, and I should repeat it. Don't you remember saying,
Yeah. You know, I thought I'd leave that point out. Boy, I'm going to tell you something. Next time we get off and go off and catch a cold, you go the other way, don't you come back here. I don't know where Art Jackson lived at the time. But out on that Rochelle Road, let me see, there's Kurt Wicker. He was just a, as you say, a one-horse farmer, but he was a farmer. And old man Robinson, well, Fan and Morgan lived up there for a while, but that was all from that Rochelle, just out this side of Rochelle. That was all farmers or cattlemen. Old man Sam Turner lived way off to the right. And he got up there and around Rochelle, everywhere he seen is a Zetra. They were old settlers, and
Now, Mr. Arch Jackson was pretty independent.
Yeah.
And he didn't take anything off.
No. He told you what he would do, and he'd do it. He told you what to do, and he expected you to do it.
In trading.
Yeah.
Then Mac, you were losing out. I thought maybe you were.
Mr. Archbishop, wife, and my daddy's family, they knew them real well, but I never did know him too well. I knew him when I saw him, but that was about all.
One of her daddy's brothers was a big grocery man, a wholesale grocery. Met with Old C. Chitty, grocery, and the wholesale in Jacksonville. That was awfully chitty. Well, you know, he knew Henry Chitty, the store in Gainesville there. Your grandfather was a grocery store man too, wasn't he?
He ran a store at one time in Micanopy.
Oh, he had a store in Micanopy.
My grandfather Chitty had a store there. The store was where Birch's Garage was. I think Dykes run his garage in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then my daddy run the store where the Myers have a store now.
Oh.
He went into bankruptcy, and that's when we moved back to the country.
This out here?
In this house, you see, like I told you before, when my mother and father were married, they lived up in her old home up here on the road, house that I showed you the picture of.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
And then when the big freeze come and killed the grove, my daddy farmed on out here for a while, but I think he lost more than he ever made. So he moved back into Micanopy and they bought a home. And he ran the grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
And then he put too much out on credit and he went into bankruptcy. And they bought this place then from Mr. J.C. Balknight, Doc Balknight, we call him.
Mm-hmm.
Because my mother's land, you see, is right out in front of this house. In fact, the line of her property is in the rut out place. So they bought this place. And he come out and started farming again.
Mm-hmm.
Something in 1,360 feet above sea level right at the front gate. That's what the surveyor told me. Now, if it's wrong, they told me.
Mm-hmm. Well, he did all sorts of farming then out here.
My daddy?
Mm-hmm.
His father moved here from South Carolina and they farmed down near Flemington. And I believe Grandpa had a sawmill, I heard him say. And then he moved into Micanopy and had this, it was a pretty large store.
Mm-hmm.
And he run the store for a number of years until the other boys began to leave home and get out. Grandpa was getting too old. So I don't know whether he sold it to someone else or not. I can't remember about that. He probably did.
When you think of Micanopy, you don't really see it the way it is now, do you?
No.
You think about it.
Yes, it was so different when I was a little girl.
Yeah.
You see, I was born in
Yeah.
Lived there until about 8 years old. I think we moved back out here, or maybe 9. But when I lived in Micanopy, there wasn't anything but horses and buggies. There might have been, I believe there was a Mr. Turner had a little brush. And then I think it was Dr. Montgomery got the next car and the bars.
Who is this bar up there now? Is he any kin to the bars we were talking about?
Yes. John William Barr's father and this J.J. Barr.
This is J.J.?
That owned the hammock up here.
Oh, yeah.
John William's father and J.J. Barr were brothers.
Oh.
And my grandmother was J.J. Barr's sister. She was a Barr.
Uh-huh.
My grandmother.
Uh-huh. Well, now tell me, what is this? This one up here, what do you call him?
John Barwadkin.
That was his grandson.
I mean, the one that lives there now.
Oh.
In Mickanoka, John William.
John William. Well, now tell me about him. He kind of runs a part of that paper, that crepe mill.
Well, now, to be perfectly frank with you, I can't tell you much about John William. His sister came to Mickanoke after his mother died. And John William was off at school most of the time. After they he married and stayed. He worked down at the mill for years and years, and that's about all I can tell you about it.
Well, now, who has the flowers?
That's John William
Boyd. They have flowers. They have beautiful flowers.
Well, is it his or is it his wife's?
Well, John William is the one that built the home there and all, bought the home. John William had some money from his father's estate.
Yeah.
Because his father, and I think his mother, probably had money too. I was pretty small then, and I heard my mother and grandmother talk about it. It seemed like that their mother had this uncle of ours, J.J. Barr, and cousin Dick Sawatki was the guardian of John William and Carrie Watson. And they were supposed to have quite a bit of money.
John William had a hobby. He grew stuff. What word I want to say? Organically.
No.
He
what
took
is it, what do they call it?
Yeah.
Hyponic or something like
that. Yeah.
He told me he had some tomatoes that, that weighed over a pound.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good size tomato.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to try one of them.
Well, I would too, but I don't believe they're as good as these old dirt red tomatoes, I call them.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that you got to fertilize so highly and keep it watered all the time, I don't think the flavor's there.
Mm-hmm. They've got a lot of pretty flowers. I've just passed there, don't you know?
Well, his wife works on the flowers quite a bit. They have a beautiful yard.
Beautiful yard. And Mrs. Myers at Storch then, he got most of her soot for the birds.
Yeah.
So, I didn't know about that. I just in there one day, and I heard them talking.